Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Tara Vanderveer took over the Stanford women's basketball team in 1985 in the middle of the Reagan presidency. She built a powerhouse of a program, led the U.S. to Olympic gold in 96, mentored a huge tree of coaches, elevated the game, became the winningest college basketball coach of all time. And finally, this week, she announced her retirement at the very moment when, for the first time, more people watched the women's college basketball final than the men's. What a career and what a legacy. We'll look back on it with her former players and a longtime reporter who covered her career. That's all coming up next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Tara Vanderveer, the winningest college basketball coach of all time, has been a legend for decades. I found an old Stanford women's basketball program online. It's from the mid-aughts, and already she'd been inducted into the Women's College Basketball Hall of Fame. She answered some questions about herself, too. Favorite movie she'd seen that summer? Well, she hadn't watched any, but read a lot of books. What does she do during a long flight? Watch game film. What's a TV show she can't miss? She only watches news and sports. If she seemed a little obsessed, well, she was, by all accounts, a totally committed and driven coach, but one who relished the job. Her favorite saying back then, according to the old program, was, "Nothing great is ever accomplished without enthusiasm!" Exclamation point. So we will be nothing if not enthusiastic this morning, celebrating the legacy of a coach who bridged the years when women had few options to even play organized basketball to this most recent NCAA tournament, where all sports fans could talk about was Caitlin Clark's shooting or Dawn Staley's undefeated South Carolina team. Before we get going, though, a good college basketball coach is not only someone who deals with X's and O's, but mentors and befriends so many young people. Here, Tara Vanderveer is at her news conference yesterday describing what she'll really take away from her career.
Yes, the championship years are on the wall in Maples, but what I see when I look up there is Kiki high-fiving Cam, Jennifer and Sonia leaving the court, arms around each other, Candace hugging me, and NECA embracing Roz. It is the friendships that we have that makes it so special.
That was Tara Vanderveer talking about her Stanford teams. We're going to have some former players on the show in just a bit, but joining us first, we've got Michelle Smith, WNBA beat writer for The Next, covered women's basketball nationally for nearly three decades. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me. It is a bittersweet topic today.
Yeah.
It is, you know, it's been a legendary career and it is done. And that's a moment that I think all of us have been anticipating, but it's here.
Oof. Kind of paralleled your own career too, right? I mean, just those decades of powerhouse Stanford.
Yeah, I've been a Bay Area reporter for 30 years, and my first games as a reporter covering women's basketball were in 1995, about 10 years after Tara got there. But I have been covering Stanford women's basketball and women's basketball in general since then, but I've spent a lot of time with Tara in her program, used to travel with the team when I was at the San Francisco Chronicle, have been to 19 Final Fours. This was my 19th Final Four this week.
Wow.
Not always with Stanford, but a lot of them with Stanford. So I've been following this program really closely for a long time.
So what would you say was special about Tara Vanderveer among these, you know, college basketball coaches, many of whom were pretty amazing in their own right, the Pat Summits or the, you know, Connecticut coach, those folks?
Everybody, all of those coaches that we know well in the mainstream, the Pat Summits, the late Pat Summit, Gina Wariema, even now, you know, Dawn Staley, Kim Mulkey, all of them have a very distinct personality. Mm-hmm. And Tara's place in this sort of Mount Rushmore of women's basketball coaches has always been as sort of the professorial figure, obviously being at Stanford, but being the one who's, she's not a yeller, she's not a screamer, she's not going to come out in a feather boa, as we've seen Kim Mulkey do. She's, you know, she's a grinder, she's a learner. I mean, the thing that's always impressed me the most about Tara, and I think has been her distinguishing place in the game, has been the degree to which she has evolved her coaching and her game with the game of basketball. She is a voracious learner of basketball and has changed her offense to suit her players and has changed her manner of dealing with players to suit the changes that have come through with student athletes as much as anyone. I think there's a lot of coaches out there who say, this is my way and we do it my way. And if you come here, we do it my way. It's never been Tara's style. And I think that's been really the distinguishing factor in her career for me.
Like, what would you say is an example of that? Like a specific example, would it like adjusting to the addition of the 3-point line in the women's game, something like that?
Yeah. I mean, she was one of the first actually who, when the 3-point line was instituted, embraced it and had her players shooting 3-pointers and saying 3 points is better than two. Let's make this, you know, let's make this something that we have in our arsenal. You know, she's changed depending on the makeup of her team. For a very long time, Tara's calling card was to recruit post players, really, you know, skilled and big kids and have a lot of them. I mean, she used to run post players off the bench, like in waves, you know, hockey lines almost, we used to joke. And, you know, and she would adjust her offense accordingly. They ran the triangle offense for a long time, which she went and studied and learned from Tex Winter, who was the author of The Triangle, who ran it for the Chicago Bulls. And, you know, she would find people in the game that did the thing she wanted to do. And she would go and she would, you know, and she would study voraciously and she would spend time with them and she would watch a ton of film. In the last few years, the Warriors have been a big inspiration for her, as they've been for many, but she's had a relationship and access to Steve Kerr to talk about the free-flowing offense and positionless basketball and how you get the most versatility out of your players. This constant ability to evolve over, as she pointed out to us yesterday, her first job as an assistant coach was 48 years ago. So, I mean, this is a coach who spans almost the entire era, the Title IX era, from the very beginnings to this moment that we're at now, which I hope is more than a moment and is more momentum. Yeah. But she has spanned it and been successful in a, you know, in a
across the whole thing. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned her as like a era spanning character. I was looking at her memoir, which was published in the late 90s, called Shooting from the Outside. And this is just a little quote about her Olympic team players. She said they'd been Title IX children growing up at a time when federal law mandated equal opportunity for girls in sports. I'm not saying they had it easy. Believe me, girls still have to fight for their fair share, and they still have to fight against negative stereotyping and homophobia and the conflicting cultural messages about what is and isn't feminine. But I grew up among the last wave of girls who had to fend entirely for themselves, for whom few opportunities were available, much less supported by law. How do you think Tara Vanderveer was marked by having to be in that generation of people who had to fend entirely for themselves, as she put it?
I mean, I think it marked her in a few ways. It made her, I think, coach with a fairly consistent attitude of gratitude. That was very kitschy, sorry, but it rhymed accidentally.
It was there. You had to take it. I understand.
It was there. I had to take it. But, you know, there was a moment on the day that she won, she passed Mike Krzyzewski with her 1,203rd win to become the sport's all-time winningest coach. She went to the press room and she sat next to these young women who play for her. And she said she was a little jealous of what they get to do, that she wanted this when she was a kid and growing up in upstate New York, that she wanted to play on teams, that she wanted an experience like the one they're having. And I think that that's informed her all the way through, this understanding that these players she coaches get to have what she didn't have. And that was a very poignant moment for me, because she doesn't often sort of say it that sort of pointedly, but she said, I think I'm a little jealous of what they've gotten to experience. But it's also the experience she's helped now facilitate for them and for the people who've played for her for four decades and plus. So I think it has been sort of her life's mission to give her players what she didn't get to have. And I think it informs everything that she does.
What do we know about what it was like for her growing up playing basketball or trying to play basketball in an organized way?
We know that she was apparently fell in love with the game in third grade. We know that she wanted to be so close to the boys' basketball team that she volunteered to be the mascot. She also knew that was the only way she would get her parents to make sure to take her to all of the games. So then she would sit with the mascot head under her arm and watch the game and not do the mascot duties. And she got fired from being the mascot because she was watching the game with the head under her arm, which the image of that just
tickled. I love it. I love it. It's perfect.
To no end. You know, she did play high school basketball, and she went on to play small college basketball before playing at Indiana, but laughs that she says she would never be able to play for herself. She just wasn't good enough for that. But that passion to learn, as a college student, she took Bobby Knight's basketball class and he invited them to come to practice. And she jokes that he didn't have any idea that she would show up every day with a notebook in her hand. Mm. And she said she would try and stay out of his line of sight sometimes when he was not in a good mood. We all know Bobby Knight was famously a little volatile. But he ended up being a mentor for her in terms of basketball. And she was one of the people she went to when it was time to take a year off from Stanford to coach the Olympic team. Mm. And I think he told her she's crazy. And he's not the first one. Her father, you know, told her basketball wasn't going to take her anywhere. And so she sent him postcards from all over the world during her career. It was just this relentless love of basketball. Mm-hmm. I think she loves the strategy of it. Yeah. She's one of the best game planners that the game will ever see. Her defensive scouts are famous. It's a lot of coaches will say, we're just going to do what we do and focus on us, but Tar will focus on you and she will take away what you like to do best and take away your best player in a moment when you need them the most. I mean, it's just, you know, US coach Lindsey Gottlieb said, Tar's got a Tara. And that's what she means by that, is that she will, you know, she will dissemble your team in the film room.
So Michelle, given that love of basketball, why do you think she retired?
I'll start with the fact that she's 70 years old. And I think that she's, I think the game is changing so much and so rapidly. There's the players getting the name, image, the NIL deals, name, image, likeness, where the players are now able to capitalize financially in college in a way that they haven't ever been before. There's also this freedom through the transfer portal where players, if they're not happy, have the freedom to transfer and go play again immediately. And the transfer portal for football, men's basketball, women's basketball, but has turned into this.
Yeah.
Sort of almost, it's a, you know, wild, wild west free agency almost. And I think it now requires coaches. It's a 24/7. As if it wasn't before, but in a different way. Not only at the end of the season do you need to recruit next year's players.
You got to re-recruit your own players again.
You got to re-recruit your own players to stay. And, you know, I just think that there's some things she wants to do. Tara's an incredibly cerebral person, and you read those things about the movies she doesn't watch and all of the reading she does, and I've had those moments with her a lot, but she's... she wants to read. She wants to write books. She wants to spend time with
her. She wants to go water skiing. No, that all makes sense. That all makes sense. We're going to keep talking about legendary Stanford women's basketball coach Tara Vanderveer, who announced her retirement this week. We're joined by Michelle Smith, WNBA beat writer at The Next. We'd also love to get your favorite Stanford women's basketball memories from the Vanderveer era. You can email us forum@kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the retirement of legendary Stanford women's basketball coach Tara Vanderveer. What your memories from the Vanderveer era? I know a lot of people down around Stanford have interacted with her, have known her, have watched her games. You can give us a call. Share those memories. 866-733-6786. You can put your memory in the Tara Vanderveer time capsule here. The email address is forum@kqed.org. We've been joined by Michelle Smith, WNBA beat writer for The Next. She's been writing about women's basketball for decades for, you know, ESPN, The Athletic, The Chronicle, all kinds of places. And we want to add in the voice of a former player. Some of you may know her. Jennifer Azey was a four-year starter at Stanford from 1987 to 1990, led the team to its first national championship in 1990, Olympic gold medalist, former coach at USF, and now the chief business development officer with the Las Vegas Aces. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi there. Thank you.
So you were on that first national championship team. Tell us about the team.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think I learned more about the team as time goes on. And it's interesting. When we got together a few years ago and we talked about kind of winning against all odds at Stanford. And at that time, you know, we were part of TAR's first recruiting class. And so Stanford was totally unproven and had never been there and that kind of thing. And none of us ever thought we were going to lose. Like, we all thought we were going to win a national championship. So it didn't even occur to us that we might not win a national championship. So I think it was a team of women that were all moving in the same direction, very, you know, extremely high work ethic. And, you know, the three-point line came in between my freshman and sophomore year. And Tara, being the brilliant coach that she is, said that three is worth more than two. And so we won a national championship on the three-point line. And we were pretty much the first team to ever do that. And, you know, big credit to Tara and just painting a picture of winning a national championship. And we all bought into it.
Yeah. When did you start calling her Tara and not Coach Vanderveer?
We always called her Tara.
You always called her Tara. Well, did she encourage that?
Yeah. Like,
that's interesting. Do you think
I don't know. I just always knew her as Tara. So.
Yeah. No, that's interesting, right? I mean, some coaches have a formality to them that's kind of different. Was she not like that? Was she a coach who encouraged you to see her as peer, or not?
No, I don't think she was ever a peer. I think there's very much boundaries and very much, you know, coach player, that kind of thing. You know, it's interesting. I talked to Gino Auriemma when I got the job at USF, and he's like, make him call you coach. So I was always Coach Azey. When I coached, it just was kind of a natural thing for me.
Uh-huh.
But no, Tara just always was Tara, but that certainly didn't make it casual. That's for sure.
Yeah. What was she like interacting with as a coach? You know, I mean, we know that like on the sideline, she wasn't one of those screamy, kind of yelly coaches like we sometimes see. But what was she like if you were in a film session or, you know, just one-on-one?
You know, like kind of awkward. I mean, in all honesty, like I think it was, when I, you know, I have some letters from her when she recruited me, and I, you know, kind of look back when she broke the coaching record and gained a little bit of insight into our start of our relationship. And I think because of that, I heard Michelle say that she's very cerebral. And so, you know, I was and I wasn't. And my parents are the ones that really connected with her. Because at that time in my life, I mean, I'm just a little kid from Tennessee. So I think I wasn't quite there yet. And like talking to her today in my current, you know, evolution, it's not that way. But as a kid, it was a little awkward because she was just so cerebral, so intelligent, you know, so it just was, again, just kind of awkward.
Yeah, that's, you know, her assistant coaches were really important during her reign, right? As to kind of maybe do some more of the cuddly, kind of like nice to the players. Not nice, but like emotionally connecting with the players.
Well, and that's Tara's brilliance too. She's always surrounded herself with great people. I mean, you know, you have Tempe there, Katie Stedding, and, you know, just great. I mean, here's Lindy here in Las Vegas and just killing it, you know? Mm-hmm. So she's always had great coaches. I connected with Julie Plank in particular. And, you know, when I think about having been a coach and recruited kids, and when I went to San Francisco on my recruiting visit, I wanted to go to the Esprit outlet. Like, I wanted to shop. And, you know, I can only think, like, that's so crazy because, you know, I'm such a worker. I was probably one of the hardest workers at Stanford. And, you know, but it was Julie that was like, hey, look, this is a kid. Like, she wants to do these things. Let's go do these things with her. I'm sure Tara was like, she just wants to go shopping. What? You know?
Yeah, right. We have some film to watch.
I know, right? But she had coaches that understood being able to connect kind of with all of us on just a real personal level and get to know us, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was just a real total team effort. I mean, June Daugherty, Julie Plank, Amy Tucker has been obviously instrumental in her career and recruited, you know, most of us.
Yeah. You know, at her press conference, she talked about how her dad didn't want her to go to Stanford. You know, she'd been at Ohio State and already winning because of the challenge of being at this kind of premier academic school that was creating,
right,
you know, a basketball team. I mean, what was that environment like for you, you know, Stanford athletics at that time? And, you know, was it difficult to balance the kind of school workload with what she was asking of you on the court?
Well, you know, it wasn't so much that, like, it was hard. And I think it was just because I felt like a fish out of water coming from a small town in Tennessee to a school like Stanford, where I felt like every student had a BMW and, you know, just, and it was all way smarter than I, you know, like just all of that. I was very intimidated and we were losing. So, but it was never the workload. Like if anything, I'm the one that pushed the envelope with us working. So it wasn't about that. It was more just kind of feeling like I didn't, you know, I didn't fit in. And then, you know, again, here come the assistant coaches, Julie and June and Amy. And, you know, I think just, really helping us to adjust and adapt to that kind of culture, you know? But it never felt like too much of a stretch balancing the academic and athletic part of it. It's just, playing basketball is what I wanted to do and what I wanted to work at.
You know, when you became a coach at USF, did that make you think any differently about how she had coached? Like, did you notice things that you hadn't noticed before?
Not really. I mean, I think all of us, when we go into coaching, take the good and scrap the bad that you learn from, you know, whoever it was. I mean, I remember, you know, when I was a player, and I think what made me a championship coach was that I played for so many different coaches across my career. But the one that I really, I think took the details from is Tara. Like everything I did was on the clock, and, you know, everything was very organized, detailed, high level, all of that. And I also, you know, from my experience at Stanford as a player, a lot of coaches told me you can't teach players how to shoot. Well, the only way I was going to build a program at USF, who, you know, the program had won 3 wins and it took us 6 years to win the championship, was to focus on the things that won championships. And that was shooting percentage and rebounding margin. So those are a couple of things that we anchored in. So the kids that I worked with for 4 years are the ones that won us the championship because they could shoot. So I think, you know, having gone through that experience under Tara at Stanford and learning how the details matter, that's what helped me a lot in coaching. And then I realized, you know, after that, that wasn't the profession for me.
What were your favorite Tara-isms? Like, you know, John Wooden, famously UCLA basketball coach, you know, had his, like, be quick but don't hurry. Like, it feels like a lot of these coaches develop these kind of aphorisms that that kind of guide and transmit the culture of their team.
I'm just trying to think of if there's any of those little sayings. I mean, I'm sure that if I heard her, I would... You're like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's it. But
Michelle Smith, Michelle Smith, did you have any of those Tara-isms? Did you can you remember any of those?
I mean, my favorite was always, some days you're the dog, some days you're the hydrant. like, you know, I mean, John Wooden's always had this sort of pyramid of things, and Tara's always made me laugh. The players asked her yesterday about her favorite Tara-isms. And, you know, I mean, it just, she had little ways of sort of, you know, of tweaking them and teasing them and using these Tara-isms, but everybody's got their list. But yes, it's, you know, the S on the jersey isn't for stupid, you know. you know, I think one that she said was her favorite was, you know, they already cast Dumb and Dumber and you're not in it. Like, she just, but again, these were not like, I don't want.
Right. No, they weren't exactly words to live by.
it was a way to tease. It was a way to lighten. And I think Jen would agree too. And we think we've agreed about this and talked about this. She has lightened through the years in terms of those player relationships. I mean, when she won, during the pandemic, when she became women's basketball's all-time winning coach, they bought her this huge fleece jacket and it said T-Dog on the back, and they called her T-Dog. Like, I think the relationship has softened through the years. Jen, don't you agree?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And, you know, I think that, you know, in her earlier days, I think the focus was so much on winning, and again, I don't mean win at all costs, because I don't believe that with her at all. In fact, the thing that's very clear when you look at her career is authenticity, ethics. She never broke any rules. And however, I think as a person, I think in the earlier days, it was like laser focused on, I'm going to take this group and win. Mm-hmm. It was less about the relationships and the ability or the beauty in engaging the whole person. And I think that's where she evolved to was, hey, you know, it's okay to get to know people and to, learn about mm-hmm. who they are and kind of engage the whole person. And because, mm-hmm. you know, even on the Olympic team, I was used to her, having played for her 4 years at Stanford. But for some of my teammates that, you know, had never played for her, it's like they saw her as this, you know, just hard-shelled, brilliant coach and, mm-hmm. and person. And it wasn't until later that I think they understood her and she understood them. And so I think it's just the that it's okay to let your guard down. Maybe that's kind of it. Because Tara is one of the best people I know, and we have a very different relationship now. Mm. Obviously, rightly so. Than when I played for her, and most of my big life career decisions include her, and I call her, and she's just very special in my life, and I think in the lives of all of us. Mm-hmm. So I think she helped us and we helped her along the way, you know?
Yeah.
But she's one of a kind. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when I kind of see her from afar and how people are talking about her and all this, it's like she's a very, very special person. And I don't know that there will be another person like her in that space.
Wow. Yeah. Let's bring in a call. Let's bring in Debbie in Milpitas. Welcome.
Hi.
Hey, welcome. Tell us your story.
Well, I refereed in the Pac-12 back when it was the Pac-10 and then in the Pac-12 for the time during the 90s mm-hmm. and the early 2000s. And then when I retired, they hired me to be the basketball observer at the Stanford home games. So I have worked for and with Tara mm-hmm. for over 30 years.
Oh, wow.
And I've seen lots of basketball games. I played basketball myself, and I have never seen a coach like her. She's the best for so wow. many reasons. And my favorite game, I think, that I watched was, this is just an example of her brilliance, was one of those epic games at Stanford against Pat Summitt and Tennessee when they were rivals.
Legendary basketball team, yeah.
Legendary. And this particular game, it was back and forth the whole game. And it was like a chess match. Every time Pat Summitt's team would do something, Tara would call a timeout or talk to them in the huddle at halftime or at the breaks. And she would change what they were doing. So it was like, you know, checkmate. And then Pat would call a timeout, and then she would adapt the game, her game. And it was back and forth, and it went into double overtime. And this young freshman went out of her mind at Stanford team and ended up making the winning basket and winning the game for Stanford that night. And just that strategy and that basketball intelligence was amazing to me. And you know, they were good friends, too.
Oh,
so
right. Yeah,
you could
I've heard
just
that.
See that camaraderie as they were playing. I mean, as they were brutally fighting against each other, there was still that friendship.
I also love that they established that thing where they had a Tennessee-Stanford series, even though, you know, they're not in the same conference or anything
year,
like that.
Yes,
every year they played each other, which takes, you're taking on some risk of losing, which might knock you out of being like a one seed. And, you know, Jennifer, I wanted to ask you about this because here you had Tennessee, the, you know, college women's basketball powerhouse in your backyard, and you got scooped out of there by Stanford to come play on the West Coast. Was that a tough decision?
It was a really tough decision. And again, I just credit my parents for connecting with Tara and pointing me in that direction. And, you know, I think they saw something in her that I was too young to see at the time. And, you know, but it's interesting, the Tennessee Stanford, you know, that whole thing was because when Tara was recruiting all of us, it was like, hey, we will come back and play near your home. So that's how that whole Tennessee Stanford rivalry, if you will, started. When our group went to play at the University of Tennessee, I think it was my sophomore year, we got crushed. I mean, when I say crushed, we got crushed. And then the first time we beat Tennessee at Stanford, I think it was my junior year, it was like, we've arrived. We right. just beat the University of Tennessee, you know. And I remember I saw Pat Summitt, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or something, and 12 years, something like that. And I said, are you as tired of hearing about all this as I am? And she goes, oh my gosh, you, Jennifer, you made the best decision that you could have. And, you know, she was always so classy, and it makes sense that the two of them would have connected just because of, you know, their care for their players and their commitment to the game and their commitment to excellence. So yeah, I mean, it was scary leaving Tennessee, but just, I really haven't looked back,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. You know, Debbie and Milpitas, I have to ask, did Tara Vanderveer complain about your calls? Was she that kind of coach or no?
So first of all, I want to say to Jennifer, I refereed some of your games, Jennifer, so I fondly remember that. As a new official into the league, I remember some of the more seasoned officials pulled me aside when I got my first Stanford game, which was huge, and said, listen, if Tara Vanderveer says anything to you, gets upset about any call, you need to listen because she's almost always right. And that was the God's honest truth. She rarely had any reaction to calls. She was too busy doing her work. And I never had, there was zero issue with her ever. And I think most officials that you talk to would say the same thing.
Yeah.
She was very calm most of the time, and if she was not, like I said,
yeah, you had to listen
to her.
Oh man, Debbie, thank you so much for calling in and sharing those memories as an official and someone close to Tara Vanderveer over the years. Really appreciate it. We've been talking about legendary Stanford women's basketball coach Tara Vanderveer, who announced her retirement this week. Getting your favorite memories of Stanford women's basketball, like Debbie just shared with us, from this Vanderveer era. You can email those to us at forum@kqed.org. You can find us on all of our different social channels. Or you can give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. We'll be back with more Stanford players right after the break. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned.
I love Tara. She's amazing. And we've connected quite a bit in the Bay. She's come to our practices. I've seen her down on their campus. I have so much respect and admiration for her, and my initial reaction is I'm thrilled for her. She can go water ski. She loves to water ski, I know. So congrats, Tara, on an amazing career.
Yeah. There you go. That was Steve Kerr's celebration of legendary Stanford women's basketball coach Tara Vanderveer. We're joined this morning by Michelle Smith, WNBA beat writer for The Next, Jennifer Azey, who was, of course, a four-year starter at Stanford after coming from Tennessee, Olympic gold medalist, and also helped lead Stanford to their first national championship in 1990. We want to introduce Charmin Smith, coach of Cal's women's basketball team, also a former Stanford player, key part of three NCAA Final Four appearances and three Pac-10 championships, and was also a former assistant coach at Stanford under Tara. Welcome, Charmin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Wow. So I feel like you, what do you want to say about Tara Vanderveer as your, you know, mentor, but also as your competitor?
Yeah, I mean, as my mentor, I just want to say thank you. I mean, I mean, I think a lot of people know the story. I never thought that I wanted to be a coach, and it was Tara who suggested that I try coaching after I finished, you know, playing in the WNBA. And it's kind of like, look at me now. And she's been there for me throughout my coaching tenure as an assistant, particularly as a head coach, dealing with COVID. I mean, I just owe a lot to Tara, and I'm really glad and are happy for her that, you know, she is moving on to the next chapter for her. And I'm so proud of what she's done for our game and our sport.
How about as a competitor? How do you beat her?
Yeah, I was still trying to figure that out as a head coach. You know, we had some success, you know, during our Final Four runs and with, you know, Michaela Cowling and some other great Cal players. But I think what I'd like to say as a competitor is that she basically elevated everyone's coaching. I mean, the Pac-12 is a phenomenal league for coaches, and we strategize, we game plan. We take away team strengths. We don't just do what we do. We make adjustments, and I really think that's because of Tara. So in our conference, oftentimes, you know, you want to beat someone, you have a common non-conference opponent, it's like, what did Stanford do against them, right? How did Tara guard them? How did Tara stop them? And I think that fed into the mindset of all of us, and we learned from her, and we figured out how to guard people, how to stop people. And I do think that Tara is a big reason why you saw a lot of Pac-12 schools going far in the NCAA tournament, and it wasn't just Stanford and the rest of the pack. There were so many other teams, you know, Oregon State, the Final Four, Cal, Washington, Oregon, and now this year with Utah, Colorado, USC, UCLA. It's just a really special conference, and I give her a lot of credit for how we show up and compete.
Yeah. Was a special conference, at least. For those who don't know, Pac-12 teams are splitting up and going to these different places. Charmin, I have heard that you both do a mean Tara impression, a good one, like mean in a good sense, and also have some good Tara-isms as well. Do you think you could do those for us?
Oh, man. You know, you guys have heard most of them, you know, that the F isn't for stupid, I think is one of the most popular ones. With Tara, but I mean, it's just that she's just so witty and she's actually hilarious, you know, and, you know, everything that she says, it has, I don't know, such value and weight to it. But I mean, my impression, you know, she just told me, well, Charmin, you know, I think you'd be a really good coach. I think you should try coaching. And I said, no, Tara, I don't want to be like you. And then, you know, look at us now, right? Look at us now.
Yeah. Charmin Smith, we know you got to go, but thank you so much for joining us. Charmin Smith, coach of the Cal women's basketball team, and of course, a key part of some really excellent Stanford basketball teams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. And again, congrats to Tara. I appreciate you guys including me in this.
Yeah, appreciate it. Let's bring in, first a comment from a listener, really sweet comment. I have admired Tara Vanderveer since I was a teen. My mom was a third grade teacher in Palo Alto when Tara came to Stanford and was delighted to be able to take her whole third grade class on a field trip to watch the women's basketball team. I'd help her line them up on the sidelines with their handmade signs and cheer along with them. Watching Jennifer Azey and all the incredible players up close was inspiring to all kids, but particularly to us girls. Then they won the championship, and suddenly our sideline seats were coveted. While watching the game from up high was a different experience in the decades to come. We couldn't have been happier to witness the swelling support for women's basketball. Jennifer, do you remember any of the little kids lined up with homemade signs? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that we sold out the majority of my senior year with no social media. No, you know, it was literally this organic kind of word of mouth. I mean, we had great press coverage and all that. But there was a real engagement of community and kids and students. Like each player had their dorm coming with signs, and, you know, it was awesome.
That's great. We are talking about legendary Stanford women's basketball coach Tara Vanderveer, of course. Want your favorite Stanford women's basketball memories from this era? You can give us a call, 866-733-6786, or you can send an email to forum@kqed.org. Want to add another former player to the mix here. Val Whiting was a Stanford basketball player from 89 to 93, part of teams that won two NCAA championships, went to the Final Four 3 years, Pac-10 Women's Basketball Player of the Year 2 years in a row, and when she left Stanford, was the all-time leading scorer and rebounder in Pac-10 history. Welcome, Val.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. So just give us your favorite memory of her as a coach.
There's so many. I remember being recruited by her, and my senior year in high school, she'd come to visit me, and I'm from Delaware. Mm-hmm. Although I live in Seattle now, and just having a one-on-one conversation with her over personal pan pizzas at Pizza Hut. that's one of my first memories of her, and just how much she wanted to learn about me as a person, mm-hmm. not just a basketball player. And then just being thrilled that I was going to one day play for her. One of the reasons I chose Stanford is because it was in California. I had this obsession with playing and going to school in California. Mm-hmm. And when Stanford started recruiting me, I had no idea Stanford was in California. And I became like thrilled and went to visit the campus, like an unofficial visit, and met the players. Mm-hmm. And of course the coaching staff, and I fell in love.
Yeah. I mean, as a student of the game, did you enjoy the kind of prep process that she would put you through? That people have referenced a few times, you know, how much work went into getting ready for each opponent?
Yeah, I felt that we knew the opponent's plays better than they did. There'd be times in the game when, like, for example, we're playing against UCLA and they call out two, and we all yell on defense, two, they're running two. It's like we knew where they were going to be. We knew the players' tendencies, you know, so-and-so goes left, or this person only can shoot going to a right. We knew them better than we almost knew ourselves. So we were always prepared and for a scout. So anytime I watch Stanford play and how, and I see like different game plans, I'm like, oh, they are so prepared. I'm not worried about them.
What was it like, you know, having been in the Tara orbit and in that kind of team atmosphere with a longtime program, and then going on to the WNBA? Do you think it helped? Like, how prepared were you for professional basketball?
Well, I think it, being a pro, it showed me how spoiled I was having a coach like Tara. Being in that system of and being around players at Stanford that have family feel. So that was the biggest difference. And I didn't win a lot when I was a pro, you know, but I won a lot, you know, when we were at Stanford and when I was in high school. So that was also a big change for me, going from a winning program to not really being a top program and not having the same kind of coaching that I was used to at Stanford, but definitely prepared me well, mm-hmm. but also showed me how much I took for granted playing for Stanford basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think she changed sort of how you played as a player? Like, we've talked a lot about her ability, you know, on a sort of tactical level, but what about like development through the years, you know, like your freshman year to your senior year?
Oh gosh, you make me go back to my memory banks. That's like 30 something years ago. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I know that I was always motivated to add to my game, mm-hmm. and to bring something new to my game. And we're always in the offseason working, and whether it's playing pickup or increasing your strength and conditioning, that seemed to always be a theme from my freshman to my senior years, just constantly improving upon what you were before.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the future, Michelle Smith. Can you tell us who's going to take over? I mean, this feels like for the next like 3 years, everyone is going to tell the next Stanford coach big shoes to fill. You know, like this is tough.
Absolutely. So Kate Pay, who was who is a little bit of Stanford royalty in that she's got family ties. Her father was a running back on the football team. Her brother was a quarterback and played on the basketball team and played in the NFL. The Pay family is Stanford athletics royalty, but Kay is going to take over. Kate's been an assistant coach for 17 years, and this has been the succession plan. It was always going to be Kate. Kate has turned down a lot of coaching opportunities to wait and bide her time and pay her dues. And she's been the recruiting coordinator. She's taken over a lot of responsibilities in the program through the years, and it's Kate's team now. And so Kate will take this team into the ACC, as we talked about the breakup of the Pac-12. So she will transition them. She will navigate this period with the transfer portal. Stanford has just sort of announced a new NIL collective where they're going to be able to play catch up a little bit with some of these schools that have these collectives where they're offering significant amounts of money to athletes. It's really, everything's changed. And Kate Pay is positioned now to take over the reins, and she will have incredibly big shoes to fill. Plus, you know, it's not just replacing Tara Vanderveer. It is replacing Tara Vanderveer in a time of great transition. Yeah, so it's going to be a big challenge.
Let's hear Tara Vanderveer, a little cut of her on Kate Pay.
Kate is going to be awesome. I've loved working with Kate. She's brilliant, hardworking, is a great communicator. She loves Stanford and loves the players here at Stanford. No one will outwork Kate. You know, she's paid her dues. Yeah.
Thinking about this new landscape of college basketball, Val Whiting, are you just kind of blown away by the explosion of the game over the last few years?
Yeah, I totally am. First of all, I'm jealous because it has NIL.
You're like,
like, what would have been my NIL evaluation when I played?
Right.
I'm always curious about that. But the talent has always been there. The talent has always been there. But with social media, the media coverage is just blown up. I mean, the fact that I think it was 18.7 million or 18.9 million people tuned into the women's championship game this past Sunday. Was that Sunday? Gosh, yeah.
It was.
It feels like so long ago. It's amazing. I could not keep my eyes off the television. I'm in school getting my master's in sports psychology, and I have not gotten any work done in March. March Madness in April, I've gotten no work done. Yeah. So
it's absolutely,
this has been the most exciting time for me because I have not been so excited about March Madness in the tournament as I was this year. And I know a lot of people felt the same way.
It was amazing. And, you know, that number of people who watch more than the men's game, which, you know, even just a few short years ago, I think would have been kind of unthinkable. And it was more than most sporting events across every sport. I think every other sport except for a few, you know, playoff football games. Michelle, this must be, as someone who's been writing about college basketball for 30 years, maybe connect up for us Tara Vanderveer and that legacy with this explosion of women's basketball. It really does seem like one lesson of this last few years is just a few people can kind of change the trajectory of a sport, you know, and of an entire kind of set of players. So how do you connect those two legacies?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, you can't deny or avoid connecting those legacies. I think people like Tara, people like Pat Summitt and Gina Auriemma, they built up to this moment. You know, when we talk about ratings, last year we were blown away that the women's championship had 10 million viewers. And this year it was 18.7 and it peaked at 24 million people were watching that. I mean, more than double at peak time watching the women's basketball championship. And it is because of the groundwork that's been laid by people like Tara and Pat and Gino, who built these programs, who created an atmosphere where women's basketball was invested in and prioritized and made other people raise their bar to match it. What Gino's done at Connecticut with 8-11 titles, and it wasn't that long ago that the clarion call was, is Connecticut bad for the women's game? And I think we know now the answer is not at all. Connecticut made everybody come to their level. And it was the same thing with Tara on the West Coast and in the Pac-12. Mm. Pac-12 is a power conference. It is not a coincidence. And it's because everybody had to meet Stanford's level. And, you know, and the same in the South with the SEC and Pat in Tennessee. Like, there are these seminal figures in the games who made everybody get better, made everybody invest, and we're seeing the fruits of that investment now. And it's really, really special to see. And it's also such a time of big change. I mean, all of these things are happening at the same time.
Yeah. You know, Michael tweets, one of our listeners, I remember before the WNBA was the mid-90s American Basketball League. Both Ozzie and Whiting played for the San Jose Lasers. And I think it's no coincidence that the league headquarters was in Palo Alto. Val Whiting, must be, you know, the other component of all this is sort of, how does this momentum for women's college basketball, does it carry into the pro ranks? What do you think?
Oh, I think it will. I mean, if you look at what's going on now with the marketing, for example, Phoenix Mercury sent out a tweet with the picture of Tarazi and the goat versus the rook, but selling the tickets for when Caitlin Clark comes to town. So it's definitely carrying over. People are seeing, teams are seeing a boost in ticket sales for the games when number 22 is coming in. So I think the momentum is going to carry. And I was just thinking about that this morning, about the amount of pressure that she must feel.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, coming in to the league. I'm sure it's just wondering how she's handling it. And I hope she has
rooting for her. We have been talking about the legendary Stanford women's basketball coach. Tara Vanderveer announced her retirement this week. We've been joined by legendary Stanford basketball player Val Whiting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for including me in this. I appreciate it.
We've also been joined by WNBA beat writer Michelle Smith. Thank you, Michelle.
Always happy to talk about Tara.
Earlier, we were joined by Jennifer Azee, four-year starter at Stanford, as well as Charmin Smith. So sorry, Ethan, Tove, and Lindsay, going out on the Stanford fight song. Stay tuned for another hour of Form Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.